This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
It's Creature Feature, a spotlight on one of the Wildlife Hospital Dunedin's extra special guests.
Yeah, we look forward to this every 4 weeks, don't we? An opportunity to be introduced to one of the guests at Dunedin Wildlife Hospital. And Jordana White joins us once again. Jordana Morena, lovely to have you with us.
Ata Marie.
All right, haven't even had a heads up about who we're going to be talking about today.
Yes, today we are going to be talking about a Matuku Moana. Do you know what that is in English?
Well, so Moana, ocean water, there. Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's a bit tricky because, of course, Moana means sea. This is not what I think of as a seabird, but it is a white-faced heron.
Okay. Oh, beautiful.
Yes. Well, that's an interesting take. Yes. I maybe have a slightly different take on them. But
really?
Yes. We'll get to that. As I was researching this bird, I started to get a little creeped out by them.
I'm
probably in the minority. So the white-faced heron is sometimes also called the blue heron. It is, believe it or not, I hadn't thought of it this way. I think that's because our patient that we're talking about today is feels quite small to me. But this is one of New Zealand's larger birds. It's really common. It's found all over New Zealand. And in fact, this one came to us from Timaru, the patient that we have in at the moment. By our standards in New Zealand, it is big. It's about 67 centimeters tall. But like most birds, it's quite light for its size. So it only weighs in at about 550 grams for being that tall. That's about, if you can imagine a bowl of about 500 M&Ms, Jeff. That's how much this bird weighs.
Measurement by food items or confectionery items. We're starting a new thing here on Creature Feature.
Yeah, that's my specialty, I think. I mean, two blocks of Whitakers, whatever's easier for you to imagine, that's roughly what this bird weighs.
So I pulled up a picture of this bird on nzbirdsonline.org.nz, which I recommend you do right now.
Definitely, yes.
I'm trying to imagine what might creep you out. Slightly hunched-shouldered look.
Yeah, it's got this, I feel like it's a little bit like Tim Burton-esque, like a little yes. Brothers Grimm-esque, like it's got a bit of a dark fairy tale kind of a look to it, like yes. It would have magical powers of some description, and I'm not sure if they would be dark magic or, you know, like just a bit, I don't know, there's something about them. I think they're cool, don't get me wrong, I'm not using this in a pejorative way, but I do find them a little bit creepy. Maybe just, I don't know, characterful, colorful in that way, I suppose. But so Jeff's looking at a picture, but I'll just describe briefly there. They have, because they're tall, they have these quite long yellow legs and lovely-looking blue-gray feathers. They have a long, sharp, dark bill. And surprise, surprise for the name, they have a white face. This is a white-faced heron. They also have, in the breeding season, they have this sort of spray of feathers, like sort of less dense feathers across their back, almost like they're wearing a korowai or a cloak.
It is like a cloak.
Yeah, it's actually, that part's actually quite cool. I think that's a quite unique look. Which is, you know, just think that this is a little bit Brothers Grimm kind of thing going.
I think it's because the head kind of shrinks back into the neck when they're sitting in an upright position, and it looks like, you know, maybe that might be a cape rather than anything
a cape.
Else.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. It's the cape look or something with the sort of korowai kind of looking thing. But I also think it might be to do with the way they move. Mm. So they're really commonly seen in estuaries or mudflats, and I've seen them so many times along like Hooper's Inlet and Papanui Inlet. They do this really like slow, exaggerated, deliberate, almost slow motion kind of walk, and there's a reason they're doing that, and that's because they're stalking their food, right? I mean, they're moving very slowly and constantly looking around to see what they can grab. And I think there is something about that walk. Also, the way they move is very fairy tale-esque.
Okay, I can see it now, and I know I've seen many of these
birds. Yeah, so that, and they move really slowly with the walk, but when they're going for their prey, which is they'll eat little fish or crabs, worms and insects, even mice, if you can believe it, which is really interesting to think about. But they move quickly when they've seen something. They've got something in their sights, they will dart for it, and it's quick. But it's quite a contrast to the way they walk through the shallow water. I've seen them even, they're found, like I said, they're found all over New Zealand, and they're found pretty much like mudflats. It can sometimes be found on the seashore, but more likely to be estuaries, ponds. Sometimes I've even seen them at the Kensington Oval when we've had a lot of rain. Mm. So there's kind of standing water. So they're not fussy about that. I will say This is another thing I find strange about them is that they actually do prefer to be, like, when they roost or they're not in the water hunting for prey, they do prefer to be up in the treetops.
High in the trees.
Yeah. Have you seen that? I have not personally.
I'll tell you where I've seen that. Kokoda, would that be right?
Sure. Yeah. Yep.
And many of them.
Yes, they do. They do sometimes go in, you know, not, they don't move in flocks, but they will kind of gather, roost in density, I suppose.
And like quite big nests in the trees. Is that right?
They will.
Am I imagining that? Little beaks poking out the top.
They will do flat. I mean, yeah, they will sometimes do nests up top. Like they've even known to nest and roost on top of light poles, apparently.
Right.
I've never seen them myself in the treetops, but for some reason I find it strange that such a tall bird would be in a treetop.
Yeah.
It seems like a little bit unstable for some reason. And you're saying something about the nests and the little beaks poking out. I have not. If you can at the moment, go look at NZ Birds online. And there's a panel of pictures on the right-hand side. And there are a few pictures of juveniles, just young Matuku Moanas. And I think they're one of the more awkward-looking chicks that I've seen. I've not seen a chick in person. The one that we have in hospital at the moment is an adult. But they are very awkward-looking baby, which is quite cute, actually. They go from cute to creepy for me.
But, big balls of fluff.
Yeah, exactly. So this one, you know, the fact that they are found all over and the fact that they do sometimes come into the urban areas, even, you know, after rain and such, does mean, of course, that they come into contact with humans in the built environment. And in this particular patient that we have at the moment was picked up by a member of the community from the roadside looking pretty sad. And she was thinking he'd probably gotten hit by a car. And only when we got it, it only weighed in at 436 grams, and it should be that 550 grams, so quite lightweight. But we didn't find any broken bones, any fractures, any displacements, so I'm not too sure about that hit by car theory. It's generally good. You have to think about that if you found a bird at the side of the road and it's not looking too well. But it has quite a low white blood cell count. It's possibly, we suspect it might be at the very beginning stages of kidney failure. And that's very likely as a result of starvation. It's about 20% lighter than it should be, which is pretty significant. Or there could be some underlying issue that caused the bird to become underweight in the first place. And it just so happened that she found it at the side of the road. Now, this is somewhat of a cautionary tale, so I want to say this, not impugning anybody, but this lovely person who means really well, she didn't get in touch with us straight away. So she did try to care for the bird herself, and was feeding the bird tinned sardines and oil, thinking it would be a nice, rich, you know, food for it to eat, which was not, you know, totally a bad idea, but unfortunately, the oil is the problem.
Right.
So the bird was eating some of the sardines, but then was getting oil, that thick oil, all over its feathers. And then that's a setback for a bird that spends a lot of its time in the water. So, but she did get in touch with us and just had, it was, it just took a bit of time to get it down from Timaru. Timaru is kind of equidistant from two wildlife hospitals. So we were trying to figure out if it should go north to the South Island Wildlife Hospital or south to us. But it's just, she absolutely did the right thing. She reported it to Doc. It's just, she couldn't quite get it to us straight away like you would if you were living in Dunedin. So that's a bit tricky. But if that's the case, we're always happy to offer advice and suggest, you know, a local vet that might be willing to take it until it can get transported to us.
It would suggest this bird was subdued enough to be able to be in care by someone who wasn't an expert
that's
in that area.
That's right, yeah. So pretty unwell bird is the gist. And that's been, in terms of being in the hospital with us, it's been, yeah, pretty quiet, I would say. Not one of the feisty ones. And that's usually a sign, of course, that it's quite unwell. It did seem a bit shell-shocked when it first arrived. And that's just having gone through the transport and, you know, having a change of scenery, of course, can be quite stressful. So that was understandable. But yeah, it's just, it is being tube-fed now with our fish smoothie. No, nice fatty fish smoothie, but to kind of protect those feathers from getting any more oil on them and becoming, you know, moving, you want some oil on the feathers, but you want it to be their natural oil and you don't want it to go too far. They become not waterproofed. So yeah, we're giving it a chance, but slowly, slowly. It's, if you have a bird that's starving, the concern is organ failure. So if you start feeding it too much too quickly, you can actually shock the system and it can kill them. So we have to go really slowly with the refeeding protocol for this patient. So we're giving it a chance, fingers and toes crossed for it, because, I mean, despite, you know, my description about these birds being creepy, it is a really cool animal. It's a native species, of course. It is a more recent arrival to New Zealand. I will say that it's self-introduced in the 40s. So it hasn't been around for too long, but it's still considered one of ours.
So no real clues as to what might be the underlying issue with this bird?
No, not at this point. It is an adult, so it's not that it was a fledgling that just hadn't figured life out yet. It could be that it was perhaps clipped by a car, but in a very minor way, so that it didn't have any physical injuries, but that it was in a bit of shock, and then that kind of started the road down, you know.
And that's going to be the case with a number of creatures, right? You're not going to necessarily extensively test for every possibility. You might just assess what can we do and see how it goes.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So the first thing with any of our patients is pain relief. We offer them pain relief, of course, because we have to assume that they're broken. Oftentimes, like this is a great example. This bird came to us from Timaru. It had a long drive. You know, that's quite stressful on a bird. We're not going to straight away, as soon as it's admitted, start doing exams and, you know, palpating it and putting it on, you know, sedating it for x-rays. That's too much straight away. So, but pain relief, because we have to assume that bird is broken. And so until we can diagnose exactly what happens, we just want to make sure that it's not in pain. So it received pain relief. It had 24 hours to just kind of settle in and relax, and then taking x-rays and doing a full physical exam under sedation. And then we test the blood. So, you know, we can do a lot with blood tests right in the hospital. So we can tell what the white blood cell count, if we're looking at perhaps an infection, underlying infection, or we test for lead as well, because that is unfortunately something we do come across quite often in our patients. So we do some basic diagnostic tests.
Or poisoning of any kind.
Yeah, toxin of some kind. We don't suspect that.
If they're
in
eating
this
all
case.
These virants.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yep. So there's a lot of things that it could be, but you're right. We can't test for everything. It would probably be, quite frankly, it would be a little bit different if it was a critically endangered species. You know, if it was a cockapoo, for example, we'd be digging further into those diagnostics. But this is a bird in abundance.
All right.
So
we have fingers, claws, talons crossed for this
yes.
for this current patient at the
yes,
hospital.
Yes, we do. And I just want to say this, although we don't actually think this heron was hit by a car, it is a good and really timely reminder to slow down on coastal roads this summer. We've already had, just this weekend, I had two call-outs about sea lions on roads and other wildlife on roads, very common, especially around those estuaries, those coastal roads. So please take care. I mean, we do share our spaces with these beautiful creatures. And unfortunately, we see a lot of them in hospital because they've been hit by cars.
And give your passengers more time to enjoy the beautiful view.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So lesson number one, get in touch with Doc if you come across an animal in distress, and that's probably the first thing. And if you do need to do anything, initially get some advice on what that is. But great that this bird has made its way to Dunedin Wildlife Hospital. Couldn't be in a better place, and let's hope it pulls through. And remember that you can support the work of Dunedin Wildlife Hospital as well. Do hop online, check out their website and the various ways that you can support. So perhaps buy some nice Christmas items from the shop. Perhaps you might want to make some donations on an ongoing basis, because as we know, as with every organisation that under the sun at the moment, struggling to make sure that those services can be maintained in these tight financial times. So if you've got a little bit extra, maybe you want to consider making some kind of contribution if you can. Jordana, it's great to talk with you again about this wonderful creature, and we will look forward to learning more about some other creature in 4 weeks' time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Kia ora.
The Wildlife Hospital Dunedin treats sick and injured native New Zealand species right here in the heart of Aotearoa's wildlife capital. Their expert veterinary team patches up more than 500 patients every year, returning the majority of them back to the wild where they belong. You can learn more about the hospital, including ways to support this charitable trust, at wildlifehospitaldunedin.org.nz, or follow their Facebook page for more fabulous creature content.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.